Good afternoon. Illinois Appellate Court First District Court is now in session. The First Division, the Honorable Justice Michael B. Hyman presiding, case number 21-0830, Kashari S. Norwood versus Sherita Moore.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Hyman. With me is Justice Carl A. Walker and Justice Mary Ellen Coghlan. I apologize for our slight delay. I'm having trouble getting my background, as you can see, but we'll be able to continue without that. So each side has 20 minutes. This is often you would get time for rebuttal, reserve whatever time you wish. And so each of you, please introduce yourself, and Mr. Saltz will tell me how much time you want for rebuttal.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Matt Saltzman, S-A-L-T-Z-M-A-N. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Kashari Norwood. I think I'd probably want to have 10 minutes. I don't even know if I'll take that long initially and reserve some time for rebuttal, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Eleanor Rourke. I represent the defendant, Sherita Moore.
Thank you. We will conduct ourselves as if we were in the courtroom. We will ask questions. If you would just stop, finish your statement, and then move on to our question, we would appreciate. Any questions before we proceed? Hearing none?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Judge. Ladies and gentlemen, Your Honors, again, my name is Matt Saltzman. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Kashari Norwood, a minor who was injured in an incident involving a broken candle that caused severe burns to her on her body. We believe that the trial court erred in applying traditional open and obvious law as an absolute bar just because this case involved fire. We think that was incorrect. According to the Restatement of Torts, the 343A, and some of the cases we cited, including the Ward case, a possessor of land owes a duty to the plaintiff of reasonable care. When the harm is foreseeable and undiscoverable by the plaintiff, they have a duty to warn and, of course, anticipate that danger and protect against it. 343A also notes that a possessor of land is not liable for open and obvious conditions unless they should anticipate the harm despite its, quote, obviousness. Here, we believe, based upon the facts, which are significant and distinguishable from some of the cases that were cited by defendants, that should be the case. Here, the dangerous condition, and it's important to note what specifically it is being alleged by the plaintiff, is in fact the broken and defective candle that ultimately was the cause of the plaintiff's injuries. We believe that that defective condition, which was the broken and dangerous condition of the candle itself, is not open and cannot be open and obvious as a matter of
fact. I have a question about that.
Yes.
In my review of the record, you know, I read the depositions and clearly the parties, you know, the mom and the daughter were asked about this candle and, you know, they both testified, or the mother testified to the fact that, you know, in her opinion, it was defective. There was an objection. And what I want to know is, since it doesn't appear to me that there's any expert testimony anywhere, was that ever ruled on by the trial court that that evidence was admissible? Because it seems to me that there wasn't a proper foundation laid for the opinion that it was defective.
Well, I think that in response to your question, Judge, you know, the lay opinion as to whether or not a candle based upon the of what the plaintiff and defendant actually saw is something she can testify to as to whether or not this candle appeared to contain the flame as it did previously. It's something that she as a layperson did see and observe before this incident took place, and something that we don't believe required expert testimony to be able to testify to. However,
let me ask it this way. Other than what's testified to in the depositions, was that particular issue ever brought to the court's attention or ruled on in any way as to whether or not that type of evidence was admissible?
It was brought up by the defendant during the initial argument. However, it's not something that there was a direct ruling against. This is something where the case was at such an early stage of F1 discovery that we had not yet had been afforded an opportunity to have an expert testify to that. But again, our position remains the same that we
I understand that, but right now we've got deposition testimony, objections, and nothing else after that.
That is true, Judge. That's okay, where we are in the case currently.
That's what I thought. I just want to make sure I wasn't missing anything.
No, you're correct, Your Honor. Again, going forward, Judge, what we had said was that the broken candle and the defective nature itself of the candle and the lack of the fire containment principles that we believe has been testified to by the defendant, who observed that candle before this incident took place, had broken it herself, and testified that all of the wax was exposed and that the part of the candle that was made to contain the flame itself was missing. We believe that that hidden and latent defect of the candle that the plaintiff, who's a minor, was not aware of, was not aware of the candle or the condition of the candle itself.
Can you describe what the candle looked like in its broken condition?
Yeah, based upon the testimony.
What are we talking about? What the size, the so forth?
Sure. It's a standard Glade candle, one that you would see in a Walmart store, for instance, which is where it was purchased in this case. It's a round cylindrical candle that would come up and have a top or a lip of the candle, so to speak, that would expose, that would go beyond the wax and the flame wick. So it would actually come up over the flame itself, which is what we believe would have prevented someone from simply coming into contact with the flame itself.
How would that stop someone from coming into contact if they're leaning over it?
Well, I don't think the testimony was that she was leaning over it. I think the testimony was that she had come up to the dresser where it was placed by the defendant. And when she approached it, given the fact that she had a large t-shirt on from being in bed just previously, the minor came into contact with, from the side of the candle, the flame, which was exposed because the actual fire containment part of the candle that goes around above the wax part of the candle was missing.
She testify, though, that she leaned over the dresser to get close to the mirror to take out her earrings?
She had come up to the dresser, that's true. She didn't lean over the candle, though. The candle was placed by the defendant extremely close to the end of the dresser. And when she approached the dresser in order to be able to lean over the dresser itself, not the candle, her t-shirt, which was oversized, came into contact with the flame and immediately went up in flames and caused extensive burns across her body rather rapidly, which is significant in this case as well. We believe that it is this
just tell us, Mr. Sussman, how was the candle behaving differently from the way it would have otherwise behaved?
With respect to this candle in particular, the candle's glass that goes around the candle's flame and wick is always protected from the sides of the candle. There will always be glass that extends up and beyond the wax layer of the candle and then protects against someone from encountering the flame from the side, which is what happened here. This is different than someone who was to lean over the candle or touch on top of the candle. Rather, somebody should be able to anticipate that simply approaching a candle from the side would not be able to catch fire because of the fact that there is this containment principle of the candle in and of the glass that goes around and protects from the actual flame itself.
And so that we're clear that it was behaving differently because it was a broken candle.
We believe that the candle itself was behaving differently than anticipated or expected. And to be clear, we don't believe that the plaintiff saw this candle in and of itself either way, but.
Well, that's a different point, whether or not she saw the candle. I'm getting to the point that it was behaving differently because it was broken. Because it seems that that the defendant placed a broken candle on the dresser while she was sleeping, a candle which she did not see when she awakened, she did not see when she left the room, returned to the room, did not see it at that point either. Is that all correct?
That is correct. And we agree that, you know, the candle was different in terms of the way that it was anticipated or expected to behave, in the fact that there isn't this glass protecting from the side of the candle, which would allow somebody in this instance to simply approach the candle and be at risk to catch fire on something like her clothing that she otherwise would not be had the candle had that containment principle around the flame and the wick of the candle.
You don't dispute that there's lots of candles that don't have any kind of container that people light all the time and put all sorts of places, do you?
It's true. There are other candles. There's candles like a tea candle, for instance, that are small that don't have glass up around the side. However, this candle, this Glade wick candle, is a larger candle that has a larger wick and flame. And something
How large
that
is it in dimension?
There's no testimony in terms of the exact height. And unfortunately, the candle was discarded by the defendant, so it was not preserved for us to be able to use it as evidence. However, based upon the testimony and the standard type of candle that it was, it would be something around 4 to 5 inches high, which would have the glass that would go extend further beyond that to cover where the flame and the wick would be. And then it would allow for one of those little caps, so to speak, to go on the top and cover the top of the candle. So you can imagine how the actual fire containment portion of the glass would encompass the entire flame and wick, and then similarly allow for there to be a cover or a top to the candle, so to speak. So again, much different than a smaller flame or wick that would be associated with something like a tea candle, which was cited in some of the cases by the defendant, for instance, given the fact that this is a larger candle with a larger wick and flame, and something that is not anticipated to be a danger from approaching it simply from the side as it was.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If the evidence is that she leaned over it, would that everything you've just said be true, or does your theory hinge on the fact that she approached it from the side?
It's a good question. I don't think that that would change anything, given the fact that, you know, this glass would also contain it all the way around and up as well. Simply leaning over the candle in that case would require her to actually get her shirt into the candle area where the exposed wick and flame would be. In this case, by not having that, from it breaking when it fell, and the defendant knowing that this candle not only had broken glass around the top, but also down below the wax level of the candle, it inherently changed the principles of this candle, which was created with this type of glass for its protection purpose.
Okay, and again, I'm having a real problem understanding why these theories would not require expert testimony.
Well, I think in terms of the way that the candle was observed and the way that it looked, and in terms of whether a layperson can testify to if, in their opinion, they believe that a candle would or would not have the same containment principles simply from looking at it, would be something that a layperson could testify to. We do believe that if afforded the opportunity to get past this motion for summary judgment, our experts would testify to the exact same thing. However, I don't think that expert testimony is necessary in a case like this, where someone that is a layperson can simply observe and make general conclusions about the ability of a candle to be able to act the way that it was when that person purchased the candle with those containment principles for the same purpose. So I do think that it's something that a layperson could testify to based upon their observations and based upon their experience and knowledge of how candles behave and the purpose for glass surrounding a candle, like in this case. And similarly, that's the reason why this type of candle was purchased by the defendant, is because of the fact that it is a candle that had containment principles to it. It was a larger candle that was supposed to, you know, make the entire room smell good. This was not just a tea candle with a purpose of providing a little bit of light. And so for that reason, I believe that the layperson, in this case, the defendant, does have the knowledge and experience in dealing with these candles to be able to testify to whether or not she believes that the type of break that she observed, and she is the only one that observed that type of damage and defectiveness to the candle. I think that if, first of all, herself testifying to
wasn't it her testimony that she had never had a candle like this before, other than on the date in question?
She had testified that she was familiar with, of course, with candles and the way that they worked. She had testified that she had encountered candles like this. However, this was
she had never had this particular type of candle before.
She just didn't purchase this type of candle for her home. This was the first time she had purchased this type of candle for her home, which is what she had testified to.
Are you telling me that she testified that she had experience with this type of candle, that there's evidence of that in the record?
I think she testified, and there's evidence in the record, that she was familiar with the way that the candle was supposed to behave, and that it was something where this particular candle was only first purchased in the home. And, you know, obviously her being able to be familiar with the properties of a candle and the way that glass would protect one from encountering it was something that she was familiar with and something that she would be able to testify to and provide opinions about.
So your claim is that she was negligent in not warning Norwood that the candle was broken and it was there.
I think that that is a large element of it. I think the fact that she was aware of this latent defect on the candle that the plaintiff, the minor, was not aware of. She owed a duty to the plaintiff. And I want to get into that duty analysis just a little bit, as I did in my brief, but she owed a duty to the plaintiff to protect against what we believe was the actual danger involved in this case, not the fire itself, but the lack of that fire containment principle that allowed the plaintiff to become susceptible to becoming burned or encountering the candle flame and wick.
So let's just say that if this case, the glass enclosure was intact, it had never broken. So we had the regular then, and it burned, we'd have a very different case in your claim.
Than I agree, Judge.
That is night and day, because your claim is the fact that it was broken, that fact takes it outside of open and obvious in this situation. Nobody testified. It was agreed by the defendants, and no word testified. She never saw it.
Correct.
No question about that. And there were things on the dresser, but she had no idea that there was a candle there. And there had never been a candle there before, right?
I think Your Honor just touched upon the second element of our allegations, which is not just the fact that the candle was broken, but I think the placement is very significant in this case as well. We think there was negligence, not only in actually using a candle that the defendant alone knew lacked its fire containment principles and was broken and defective, but the second element of that and the second allegation that the plaintiff makes is that the placement in and of itself near the edge of the counter without warning the plaintiff, having known that she had placed it there and in this negligent fashion, was another element of what caused this injury. I think both of those things in conjunction with each other are the negligence, so to speak, that you know ultimately caused the injuries to the plaintiff. The fact that fire was what was involved is simply secondary to the fact that she had used something that was dangerous and had a latent defect that only the defendant knew about, that she put the plaintiff in a position to become harmed that she otherwise would not have been in had the defendant not used this candle that was defective and placed it in the location that she did, and further directed the plaintiff, the minor plaintiff, to that counter in order to be able to go and take her earrings out. So we have a number of different elements in the chain of causation here that suggest that the defendant, who was the only one who knew about the condition, the location, the placement, and ultimately the direction of the minor to this candle, went ahead and directed this young lady to this danger that she knew of, that we don't believe was open and obvious as a matter of law and should not be an absolute bar. And by doing so, the plaintiff encountered the dangerous condition, which was the candle in and of itself, which caused her to become burned by that exposed flame and wick.
So what you're saying is there's a question, this came to us on summary judgment.
Correct.
So there's a question of fact with regard to the open and obvious issue.
That is exactly what the plaintiff is arguing, that this is an argument that should ultimately be decided by a jury, and that there should not be an absolute bar as a matter of law based upon an open and obvious theory that simply it involved fire, which the state of Illinois has recognized.
That's how you're distinguished from the two main cases that the defendant relies on, right?
But I think there's more to distinguish it from those cases as well. In those cases, we have a four-year-old that deliberately climbed a counter and encountered a candle that she had seen previously. And we have another one in which a 12-year-old child stomped out a flame that he was familiar with being there, causing burns, of course, or injuries from the fire. It's completely different than someone who literally didn't know.
The cases are extremely different. They're distinguishable.
Agreed.
And when you boil it down, what we have here that we don't have in the other cases, and what you're saying is there's a latent defect, which raised the duty on Moore. Because
absolutely.
I mean, if it hadn't been defective, we probably wouldn't be here this afternoon.
I think that's the case, but I also think the placement of the candle is something to consider. I think 343A really speaks to this exact situation when it says that unless the defendant in this case should anticipate the harm despite its quote unquote obviousness, in this case argued by the defendant to be the flame, and in our case saying that it is the defective nature of the candle, we think that it imposes a duty on the defendant, and it should impose a duty on the defendant. They should not be able to be absolved of liability 100% because of the fact that the plaintiff was burned by fire. When this type of set of distinguishable facts is presented in front of the court, obviously we think should be presented before a jury, we think that a jury would be able to determine that in this case, there are facts that distinguish it from open and obvious law. And because of that, a jury would be able to determine that it was these actions of the defendant that were negligence and imposed the duty on the defendant to the plaintiff, the minor child in this case, and could have ultimately prevented this injury, or could have at the very least imposed the duty on the defendant to warn the plaintiff when she directed the plaintiff to this defective condition candle that there was something there and that it otherwise was in a dangerous condition. I think that that is a minimal imposition.
I want you to be able to finish your thought here, but I have to go back a second. You implied earlier that discovery was not complete. I think you were answering Justice Coghlan's question when you said that you had only done the F1. So, and this motion was brought prior to the completion of discovery?
Well, what I would tell you is that F1s were in fact completed at this point. There was no one else to take other than the mother and the child, but we had not gotten to expert F3 discovery yet when this motion was filed, and ultimately a briefing schedule was entered on the motion. F2 discovery was not completed either, even though that's neither here nor there with respect to the arguments presented before the court today. But yes, that's correct. We do believe, and we did say during the oral arguments initially on the underlying trial court's decision on this case, that we do believe that if there is a question as to whether or not, first of all, we think a layperson can testify to this, but whether or not the candle's defective nature would make somebody more susceptible to becoming burned, that an expert, our expert, would testify that that is the case. But again, I don't want to get away from the fact that I do believe that expert testimony is not necessary for the defendant to be able to, based upon her knowledge and experience, testify as a layperson as to whether or not this candle, that she knows how it's supposed to behave and saw it behave properly before this incident took place when she had lit it in the past before it broke. I believe that a layperson like the defendant, Ms. Moore, should and could be able to testify as to whether or not she believes, and she did believe, that this candle—
Mr. Saltzman, we understand that's your position, but I think what Justice Walker is getting at, and my question is, did anyone bring it to the attention of the court? Oh, Judge, this motion is premature. We want to do expert testimony discovery. We want to declare an expert. That hasn't been done yet. Can you delay this until such time as we have been provided an opportunity to do that? Did anyone object? Did anyone bring that to the court's attention, or did everybody just file their briefs and argue?
I don't believe that it was something where the court overruled our ability to obtain an expert. So no,
that's
that is
not my question. Did anyone object that this was premature for any reason?
Plaintiff did not object that the motion was premature. And we did believe that obviously if we got past it, there would be expert discovery in this case. But no, Judge, directly responding to your question, we believe that as a lay person, the defendant could testify to this and it did not require expert testimony, despite the fact that might have been helpful if this matter was able to continue and get to trial. But no, we did not request that because we do believe strongly that the defendant is able to testify and did testify to that exact question, Judge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If there aren't any more questions at this time, you still have your time for rebuttal.
Understood. Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. O'Rourke.
You're muted.
Sorry, Your Honor. I want to talk about this issue with broken glass and the issue of experts. Plaintiff never asked for a delay in this in order to obtain experts. And once summary judgment was filed, plaintiff has the burden of showing some evidence to counter summary judgment. He could have asked the court, as often done, let me get an expert. I think an expert never did that. And again, it's plaintiff's burden once summary judgment is filed, or the opposing party's burden, to provide some evidence to support their case. Plaintiff simply has not done that here in regard to this issue of the broken glass. Plaintiff fails to provide any explanation as to how the broken glass enclosure affected the central question. Was a candle's flame open to obvious dangers for which Sherita Moore owed a duty to protect or warn? Candles, first of all, are not required to have an outer covering. That was made clear in the Samson
case. No, but that's not the question here, because this candle was constructed in order to have that glass. So if it is not in that condition, I mean, there's no claim against the manufacturer here. We're just with the mother. And the question is the duty of the mother, not the manufacturer. The manufacturer, if they didn't have that enclosure, might have been liable, considering the height of the wax, the length of the tip, and other factors. So, but we have to look at it in the situation we have, and that is that under these facts, you agree that there was no glass around the
there, There was some glass. There was some glass. There wasn't entirely glass free. There was a crack, a little break in the glass. There was glass.
You say a little crack in the glass. I reading the briefs, I didn't get the idea that the brief, it was just, that it was there with a crack. Is that what you're saying?
Some was missing. Some of the glass was missing. That's undisputed. That's undisputed.
Okay. That's what I just asked you. Okay. So
there was glass around it. Some glass was missing.
That goes to this question. So there is a question of fact here, is what Mr. Saltzman's saying. There's a question of fact because a candle was not in the condition it should have been in. And the duty with regard to that in the question, he's not saying, and you agree, I would assume, that Nord has conceded that she knows what the candle is and the danger of a candle. That's not the issue, is it?
That's part of the issue, yes. But I wanted to.
Issue. She's conceded that issue. It's not, that is, if that's the issue.
But she's,
that's I'm the sorry, only issue?
In regard to open and obvious, I guess I'm confused about your question, Your Honor.
Well, because yes, the question is open and obvious.
Right.
Of course. But it's not done by the fact that it is a candle. That's not the end of the question. Correct?
Correct. It's a candle.
Okay. So, right, it's a candle and it was in broken condition. Is that correct?
The outer quadrant was in broken condition. That's correct.
Okay. Whether that made it an open and obvious under the circumstances of this case raises an issue of fact, because she said she didn't see it. Her mother placed it there. Her mother didn't warn her about it. There had never been a candle there before. So the cases you cite, as Mr. Saltzman indicated, seem to be where young people should have realized the danger of a candle or the light, the flames. And they did something active to come in communication with those flames. That didn't happen. She didn't even know the flame was there, which you've conceded.
I conceded that, but again, okay. Can I deal with first with the broken enclosure issue first before I get into the book? Okay. So there's no evidence here. We acknowledge that the glass was broken on the candle. That's acknowledged. That's not in dispute. But there's no evidence in the record at all as to how that missing piece of clear glass made that burning candle less visible for one or dangerous because of that. It's a condition. It's not a cause. It's a condition. Had plaintiff been walking by the candle.
Wait. Let me just stop you there. You said it's a condition, not a cause. On what basis are you saying that? That's your argument. That's your argument.
That's the evidence. There's no evidence, Your Honor, that the candle behaved any differently than a candle would have because of that broken glass. No evidence. Plaintiff was injured when she leaned over the candle. If she had walked by, I would admit, if she had walked by that candle and flames are coming out a different way from that candle, that candle is acting like a candle should. There's no evidence that the broken container had any effect on that candle at all. It's speculation to say, well, it was broken, therefore it was somehow more dangerous than a regular candle. That is pure speculation. And again, plaintiff had an opportunity to have some evidence set forth. He never did. She never did have evidence set forth as how this candle was somehow dangerous because the outer container was broken. There's not dispute it was broken. The situation is there's no evidence supporting that this candle acted other than a candle should. Plaintiff was not injured again when she walked by and the candle acted differently. She leaned over and the evidence does support. On page 534 of the record, plaintiff testified she was injured, the candle encountered her when she physically leaned over the candle. That's when she was injured. There is no evidence to support this broken container, which we acknowledge is there, that it made this candle act differently. And that is a difference here. And that's what makes this not different from the other cases, frankly, because this broken container had no effect. There's no evidence of that fact. Plaintiff, again, has the burden of setting forth some evidence to counteract summary judgment. Some evidence doesn't prove his case, but it has set forth some evidence that candle because the broken container was dangerous, other than the power of the fact it was a flame. There is no evidence to support that. There's no evidence that this flame was uncontained in any way. Simply by plaintiff arguing that does not make that a fact.
Mr. Rourke, what about the fact that the candle, that the daughter didn't know the candle was there, and the mom didn't tell the daughter about the candle, and the mom didn't tell the daughter that she lit the candle when she was sleeping the next morning?
Well, that brings you into, I believe, Your Honor, the open and obvious situation. And you have a flame, you have fire, which Illinois clearly acknowledges is an open and obvious danger. And the question then becomes, should a reasonable person of similar age, using their ordinary perception, intelligence, and judgment, she's 13 years old, have recognized the open and obvious danger the fire or burning candle presents?
Stop right there. She's already conceded she knows. You even said it's conceded she knows a candle presents an open and obvious condition. Okay, you use that as the key question. You can't have it that way. That's circular. Okay, that doesn't help us at all. So that can't be. Tell me what you think the issue is then, because you can't make that the issue. She's conceded it, and that's not the answer to the question.
She's conceded that she saw it. What she's arguing, Your Honor.
She did not see it.
She didn't see it, but plaintiff is not alleging or arguing that fire is not open and obvious condition. What plaintiff is focusing on here is the fact that this container of the candles container was broken. That's what plaintiff is focusing on. There was a flame in this candle.
But she didn't see the candle or broken or anything. She didn't see it. So now the question is, I think the question that you would be asking is whether the it's not whether the danger, whether she saw the danger, but whether it was in fact visible. The question for a jury to decide is, was the candle visible? Was it visible? We don't know that. Right now, that's a question of fact.
And I would argue, Your Honor, the law clearly says that the underlying facts regarding the condition are undisputed. It becomes a question of law. There is no question here. The candle was, and the container was in, no question. It was located in the center of a small dresser.
Let me finish.
Mr. Salzman said, this is a large candle. It was a lit candle. It was in the room, but it was not groggy or sleepy. She went up for about an hour, I believe. She could look down and see that candle. And she had ordinary perception and judgment and intelligence.
That's not the law either. As you know, we don't look at we look at what a reasonable person,
objectively,
a 13-year-old girl in her situation. And that's not a question we can answer, whether they would see it visible or not. Tell me why that is an issue of fact, whether that was visible. Because we know she didn't see it. That's for sure. So this situation is different than the cases you say. You don't cite any cases like this case, because in the two cases that you rely on, they both saw the flames. They absolutely saw the flame. What they were drawn towards the flames. In this case, there is an issue of visibility, and that goes to the essence of what this claim is. What's your response to that?
There is not a question of visibility. This is viewed objectively. And with the facts, again, are undisputed. This is a candle, as plaintiff counsel just stated, a large candle on a small dresser, aflame. Based on that fact, Illinois law clearly holds you can look at that fact, undisputed. And a 13-year-old should recognize that.
Standpoint. Hey, we've already conceded. They conceded she knows what a flame is, okay? It's not like you're trying to put it back in this box. It's not in that box. This situation, we know she didn't see the candle, and we know there are personal items there, and we know her mother put on a candle that had broken glass, and it was in some kind of, it was not in the condition it should have been in, okay? And we know her mother didn't warn her. So there are a lot of questions of fact with regard to whether it's open and obvious. And you keep going back to the fact that she's a child and she should recognize fire. That's not the point.
Let me ask you, one thing regarding that, open and obvious, if that's the fact and the law says using, you know, their perception, judgment, et cetera, she could look down and see that. In every case then involving any alleged open and obvious, it could be, plaintiff could argue, well, I just didn't see it. And we know for a fact the court looks more than that, because a lot of cases talk about that the plaintiff did not see it. And I want to cite you to one case, Stevens versus Riley, the second district case from 1991. That in that case, it was a 17-month-old child out and about, old enough to be at large and drowned in some water, water not a fire, but didn't see the water. But the court said, yes, didn't see it, but based on perception and judgment, should have known it was there. That was a 17-month-old child who didn't see it. In this case, plaintiff did not see it, but our argument is she should have seen it. The facts are undisputed. The candle was right there on the dresser.
That's a question of fact.
A large candle. It's not a question. I was just saying, Your Honor, it's not a question of fact. It's not a question of fact.
There are other cases.
It's a question of law.
There are other cases in Illinois, Supreme Court, where somebody goes to a swimming hole, an adult goes to a swimming hole. Now you would say that it's open and obvious danger because it's water, is that correct?
But water is typically considered to be an open obvious danger.
Okay, dives into the water and didn't see the pole or the pipe that was under the water. Now the court said, no, we can't have summary judgment on that. There's a question there. So it's not considered, just because it's open and obvious does not answer the question in this case.
And I would disagree, that's a different situation because you have something under the water that can't be seen. You have in this situation, you have a candle which was aflame on the dresser.
We don't know. She said she didn't see it. You know, we don't know. There's questions of fact. How tall she was, the placement of the items, what the items were, how big the items were, what she was doing. You know, she came into the room and went to the mirror to take off her earrings. So, you know, all that happened in split seconds. And you've already answered all the questions, but the question becomes visibility. And that's, I'm just asking, you know, to me, that would be a question of fact.
And again, I think the facts are undisputed. First of all, she was tall enough to lean over a dresser and have it catch a fire. So
no,
she was tall enough. But let me finish my facts, please, Your Honor. That there's no dispute about what the candle was in terms of how there was broken enclosure, that it was a large candle, as just stated. It was on a dresser and a flame. Fire is considered open and obvious danger. You can't be a plaintiff and argue with your blinders on, I didn't see it. If it's right in front of you, it is an open and obvious danger. What? Whether she says she saw it or not, that's another argument.
You've already opened the question.
No, it's not, Garner, because the facts are undisputed.
My point is broken. Apparently, there's disagreement in what was broken. You say it was almost all intact with a crack. You said there were some pieces missing. We don't know. Apparently, that is still a question of fact as to what that all was about in the condition. So, you know, you're saying, oh, now it's big because he used the word big. I don't know what the word big means. Big in terms of a candle can mean a lot of different things. So in when you compare to, you can't say big without comparing it to something. So there's a lot of open questions of fact that you are just raising now.
No, that's actually not true. We don't just dispute the candle was broken. What we know, because there's no evidence that the candle acted other than a candle.
Tell me the condition.
And we know there's no allegation. There's no allegation here that either exception. There's no contention that from plaintiff that she was distracted to not see a candle that was a light on the dresser. The facts, and here the facts are undisputed as to the key elements here. There's a broken enclosure, but no evidence that flame behaved any differently than a regular candle. No evidence to support that. And she was a 13-year-old with perception, intelligence, and judgment. She approached this dresser without allegations or distraction and did not see it for whatever reason, but she can't walk around with blinders on if you're a plaintiff. You have to exercise judgment as well. That's a given. She did not see it, but you can't walk around blinders on and say, hey, I didn't see it. That way it's not
obvious. Even you, concede she didn't see it. So there is a question here whether a person in her situation would see under the conditions here, considering it's in broken condition, which apparently hasn't been resolved as to what how it looked specifically, because the two of you seem to be disagreeing about that. So in any event, I understand your contention.
Just briefly, Your Honor, the broken condition has nothing to do with her seeing the candle. There's no evidence here that broken condition of the container affected that candle's flame in any way. And that's really speculative for plaintiff to argue that and to state that has an effect on this. What we do know is there was a lit candle on the dresser, in the center of the dresser in the room. That was visible on the dresser. They both stated it was there. It's not contested.
It was visible, and then you're saying that it was there.
It was a flame. And the reason that the court says open and obvious is you can see that. You know, fire is visible. This wasn't hidden or obscured. There's no allegation it was hidden or obscured. This is a flame.
There are allegations.
A candle on a table.
I don't know.
There was no allegation it was hidden. No.
There were allegations that there were personal items on the counter that she put out the night before. And we've already gone over five or six times, she did not see it. So there is a question of visibility. That's all I'm saying.
Plaintiff testified she could see everything on that dresser. She didn't see the candle. She didn't look at it, but she said that. And if you look at her deposition, she said the room was lit enough. She was visible. She could see on the dresser. That is true. And again, plaintiff has a burden also to use due care for her own safety. You can't hold the property owner, her mother, homeowner, responsible for everything. They're just the facts.
When you put a candle that's broken in a room where people sleep, that you've never done that before, and a position of day, there's a duty there. That's what they're raising. They're raising a question that's different than the cases you have cited. This is a situation that falls into some, not the exceptions, because they didn't raise those two exceptions, but it falls into other cases that have been cited in the briefs.
And
Go ahead.
I would just say briefly, I know I'm gonna run out of time.
You bring up
the broken closure again, that there was a duty because it broke. There's no evidence that this broken enclosure affected that flame. So it's speculation to say that. So then you get back to a flame and a fire on a dresser. And should a 13-year-old have recognized that, look down, use order of perception to see, hey, you know what? There is a candle here that's lit. I should be careful of that fact.
It's like the case of the swimmer who didn't see the pipe.
Not, Your Honor, because a pipe you can't see underwater. But you can see in a dresser where you look down.
You can see underwater, and there are many cases where people dive into shallow pools. You can see underwater.
I would say that's different.
Well, you say it's different, but how's it different than here?
All plaintiff had to do was look down and see the lit candle.
She did look down, but she didn't see it.
Your Honor, there's no allegation it was obscured in any way. There wasn't obscured. There's no contention it was obscured in any way. It was on the dresser, in the center of the dresser. All the testimony stated that. It was not obscured or hidden in any way. It was simply there on the dresser. Plaintiff failed to see it. You have to go back to open and obvious. The facts, the underlying facts in this case.
Ms. O'Rourke, I don't want to interrupt you, but I've been trying to get a question in here.
Yes.
Because you just mentioned your open and obvious again, soon as the issue of fire or the flame come up, you say, that brings us back to open and obvious, correct?
The candle was an open and obvious condition. Yes, the lit candle was an open and obvious.
You could have answered it with a yes or no. I mean, you're saying yes, yes. Right?
That's yes, what brings yes. it back to open it and was. Obvious. Correct.
But the issue here is not just an open and obvious flame from a candle. The issue is that we're talking about a candle which has clearly been broken and it's now a defective candle. And what the plaintiff is also arguing that it's a defective candle, which was negligently placed. So they're referring, they're saying that the defendant negligently placed the candle on the dresser, and by doing so, had a duty to warn that there's a candle on your dresser, and that warning never occurred, and that's where their argument is.
And I'm not trying to be a broken record with this broken enclosure, but I would agree with you if this candle, if there's evidence this candle acted any differently than a regular candle with a broken enclosure. There's no evidence to support that. So you have a flame, and you can't get negligent placement until you get past duty. An argument, this is open and obvious, there's no duty here. It was placed in the center of the dresser. It was visible. Plaintiff said she could see everything on that dresser. She didn't look down and see this, but she could have seen this. The room was light enough, she said, to see everything. She didn't see it there. And again, plaintiff also has a duty to use reasonable, some judgment and perception to look around at things. And this is an open and obvious danger because of that flame. The broken glass, no evidence, is an effect of that.
Sure. You already answered the question, Mr. Rourke. You're repeating yourself. That's the only reason I jumped in, because you were repeating
yourself. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
The defendant testified at her deposition that the candle was behaving differently to the extent that the flame was larger than it normally would be with the broken clear glass.
I don't recall her testifying that, but I would question how she would compare that. Plaintiff never set forth any evidence regarding that.
Well, she says she was familiar with it, that she had bought those before, but never brought it to her home.
Are you talking about defendant?
Yes, defendant.
Okay. And I would say if the flame was larger, wouldn't that be more visible if that's the case? If you have a larger flame, would it be more visible? If it was acting different. Maybe. I'm not sure defendant testified in that regard,
there's two issues here. One is that the candle was behaving differently because it was broken. And of course, defendant knew that. But the defendant didn't tell the 13-year-old minor plaintiff that it was acting, that it was behaving differently. And then secondly, it was the placement of the candle on the dresser that actually caused the defendant's burn. And the defendant is arguing that the candle was negligently placed on the dresser in such a way that it would cause burns.
And again, as I argue, there's no evidence that this broken container affected that candle in any way in terms of how it burned. Plaintiff has the burden of setting forth evidence.
You've already told us about plaintiff. I'm cutting you off and start repeating yourself. So if I'm asking you a question and you're repeating yourself, I will cut you off. But otherwise,
that's fine. But I'm not sure. I guess I'm not sure what your question is then, Your Honor, because.
Okay. The defendant testified that she had purchased this candle before, but never brought it to her home.
Okay.
You don't recall that testimony?
I recall that she had not had that candle in her home before and lit it.
So she also testified she was familiar with the candle to that extent, but had never brought it to her home. She also testified that she dropped it. Maybe there's conflicting testimony, but maybe it was in the bathroom that she dropped it.
She wasn't sure. She didn't say she definitely dropped it. She didn't know.
Okay. And I believe the plaintiff also testified that the defendant told her she dropped it in the bathroom. Is that correct? So at some point the candle was dropped. We don't know where it was dropped, when it was dropped. Maybe it was dropped in the store. I don't know. But bottom line is this. You even agree that the candle was broken.
Correct.
Much you agree with, whether it was dropped or whether it was thrown against the wall, it was broken. So correct. Now we
broke the enclosure. I would clarify the enclosure, not the candle, the enclosure.
Yeah, the enclosure was broken. The enclosure which contains the flame.
It contains a candle.
Okay. All right. So and at that point, the defendant knew that the candle was defective. The defendant did not tell the plaintiff, the minor, 13-year-old minor plaintiff, that the candle was defective. And then it was the argument from the other side is that it was the placement of the candle on the dresser that caused the injury. Negligently placing the candle where it was placed on the dresser.
Is that a question? I'm asking you to respond to that.
This is what their argument is. I'm asking you to respond.
Yes, I believe I've responded. You said I repeated myself, but I go back to my same argument. We don't dispute that this was broken. There's no disputing that the candle was broken, but there's no evidence that that candle acted differently because of that break in the candle. No one testifies it acted differently than a regular candle.
So the defendant's testimony at the deposition is not evidence. Is that what you're implying?
But she didn't testify in that regard. She did not testify it acted differently. There was no testimony in that regard. I would disagree with you on that. There is no testimony to that effect. Plaintiff leaned over, and that's when her shirt caught on fire. She leaned over the candle. How a broken enclosure would affect that? I disagree there.
Why is it relevant? To the way you're saying it is, it doesn't matter whether it was broken or not, right? Because there was a flame. Is that what you're saying?
Under the facts in this case, there is no evidence that the candle acted any differently. Plaintiff leaned over the candle. And her shirt.
Why did it have to act differently?
Because it was a flame. It was a flame.
So what?
Fire is an open and obvious condition.
You say we don't know if it acted differently, right?
Well, there's no evidence it did. There's no evidence that by plaintiff that it did.
Why is that relevant to the question of visibility?
It's relevant because plaintiff is contending that broken container made the candle act differently. That's a key part of the contention by plaintiff, that the broken container was the dangerous condition. And there's no evidence that broken container affected how that candle behaved. There's no evidence. And again, plaintiff has that burden of setting forth evidence.
Well, I don't know. I think you're putting too much.
The plaintiff's testimony is not evidence?
Sorry?
The plaintiff's testimony is not evidence either? That the candle was behaving differently?
I don't believe plaintiff testified to that regard.
Oh, okay. I thought you just said plaintiff testified.
No, plaintiff did not testify that regard. No, plaintiff did not.
Neither did defendant, correct?
There is no testimony from anyone that candle behaved in a way that was somehow dangerous or something different than a candle would behave. There's a flame to a candle. There's no question the container was broken. There was a flame. Plaintiff leaned over the flame and her shirt caught a fire. I don't see how
there was also no testimony that the flame was larger than it otherwise would have been.
I do not believe so, Your Honor. That is not my recollection of the testimony at all. I'm looking at my evidence and I don't believe that is. There was testimony where it was located, what the break looked like, but there's no testimony that flame and that candle acted anything other than a candle would.
But the fact is that this candle was constructed with a glass enclosure, correct? And we know it was broken and there was testimony that the glass was missing, went all the way down to where the wax was. So some of the wax was exposed. And I don't know, all the way around, or I don't know, the two of you seem to disagree on condition, but we know there were missing pieces. So the candle could act in the exact same way it would have acted in any event. But what's important here is, like the pipe in the swimming pool, or in the man-made hole, water hole, is that it's not in the condition it should have been in. You know, in the pipe case, the pipe had been moved. In here, the glass enclosure is broken. If there had been a glass enclosure, as we talked about this before, we probably wouldn't have had a case here. It's the fact that without that glass enclosure, things can come in contact with that flame, and she knew it was broken. So that's the negligence, as I understand their complaint, that they've alleged. Am I wrong?
I don't want to disagree with you, Your Honor.
You can disagree with me. No,
I think you're wrong. I do think you're wrong.
Tell me. I want you to tell me.
Because you keep going back to this broken glass. She leaned over and her shirt had gotten on the side of the flame of the candle in a broken area of that and caught a flame, I would agree with you. That didn't happen. Plaintiff leaned over the top of it and the flame caught her shirt fire. It wasn't to do with the broken container. There's no evidence. And I will record 691, 692. There was no testimony by either plaintiff or her mother, Sarita Moore, the flame in the candle was uncontained, or that the flame had escaped from the candle's wick due to the broken container. You're coming back to that, but I would ask you to look at the record and see if anyone testified here that that candle acted differently because it was a broken container. It did, there's no testimony to that effect. And it was broken, it's undisputed. But you can also have a condition and not have it be a cause. And there's no testimony in support of that. Plaintiff has, you know, doesn't have to prove his case in summary judgment, but he has to set forth some evidence in that regard. Otherwise, it's just speculation. And there's no evidence other than the speculation as to that. Because of that, this was a flame. Plaintiff was 13 years old, and she had her own responsibility to look at her surroundings. There's no question the law talks about that. It was visible, it was on a small dresser, a flame. There was a flame going on there. She could look down and she was not tired, she was not distracted. She wasn't instructed to go to that mirror. She was only to hold by defendant, pick your ears off, that was it. She didn't see it, but using ordinary perception, judgment of a 13 year old, the question under clear Illinois law is should she have seen that and taken notice of that and not encounter that because she would have seen that. And we argue, yes, she was. Summary judgment was correctly entered here by the circuit court. We ask the summary judgment entry be affirmed for these matter, for this these issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I'll try to be brief here, but I do want to address a couple of the points. Before I even get started, I want to make sure that we understand because there's been a lot of implications as to what the burden is here, that the burden on a motion for summary judgment, you know, should be viewed in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, in this case, the petitioner and the plaintiff. All we've heard from the argument from defendant, and we continue to hear, are arguments about where the plaintiff leaned, what the enclosure looked like, whether the plaintiff saw this flame, whether it was on the center or the edge of the counter. And I think Your Honors have identified that accurately. These are all questions of fact, all questions of fact that absolutely should go to a jury and should have gone to a jury in this case and still should go to a jury in this case as to whether or not the defendant was negligent in these different elements that the plaintiff has pled in their complaint, the placement of the candle, the placement of a defective and dangerous candle. And there's been a lot of argument about whether or not there's evidence. The plaintiff has to present some evidence. The plaintiff doesn't have to prove their case, but they do have to present some evidence. And let me say very clearly, based upon my understanding, testimony of the plaintiff and defendant is evidence. And in this case, there's a lot of testimony of the plaintiff and defendant in this case that speaks directly to those issues that we believe not only should overcome summary judgment, but ultimately should prevail on the case. And I want to direct Your Honor's attention.
Can I ask a question? But there's something that was said by Ms. O'Rourke, and I don't know if that's your position. She said that it's your position that the candle was acting differently because of the broken condition. Is that your contention?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's be clear, open and obvious doesn't speak to whether or not, there's a candle, and it doesn't speak to whether or not the candle is being, it's about fire, right? And the fire is a limited portion of the danger that ultimately caused the plaintiff's injury in this case. With respect to the question of fact and the testimony that's been given, citing to the record pages 752 to 755, these exact questions were asked of the defendant and ultimately were also answered by the plaintiff when she had spoken to the defendant in a party admission after the incident took place. This exact testimony was given that the glass would make the candle dangerous to someone like Kashari who would be standing close to it, that the glass lacked the part of the glass that was had the purpose of, quote, protecting the flame. Ms. Moore said that the candle had all of the wax exposed, as well as the area where the wick and flame was contained. This is direct testimony from the record. And this isn't anything that an expert would need to testify to. This is lay testimony as to an observation made to the condition of the candle. And again, disputes over these questions continue to support the plaintiff's argument that the court cannot, as a matter of law, find that this case should not go to a jury simply because fire is involved, making it absolutely open and obvious. These questions impose a duty on the defendants. And the duty that's imposed is because the defendant had actual notice of the dangerous condition that the plaintiff has pled in their complaints, and had actual notice of the lack of the fire containment principles, and had actual notice of the defective candle. And because the defendant had actual notice, she's in a special position where she has to do things to protect the minor plaintiff from encountering this dangerous condition that ultimately led to some severe and extreme injuries of the plaintiff that she will never recover from. The duty is owed because of a number of different things. The duty is owed because the magnitude of the injury to the plaintiff is significant. That the burden placed upon the defendant to simply warn the plaintiff or place it in a different location is so minimal that the court has to take notice of this and impose this duty on the defendant, the landowner or the property owner, or in this case, the person who's placed and created the dangerous condition herself. We also have heard some testimony and some argument, and a small note about the distraction exception. I know there's been argument that the plaintiff is unable to make this contention because they didn't raise it in their initial brief, but it goes beyond without saying that it does need to be clear that the plaintiff would not have discovered this broken candle, but for the condition that it was in. It's not something where she would have gone in and be expected to notice that there's a candle there. And again, that's not the element that the court looks at as being open and obvious. It's the fire. And in this case, she testified. She did not see it. She did not see the candle. She did not see the flame. And there was a reason for that. And she, most importantly, did not see the defective condition that the plaintiff alleges is the cause of this incident. We also need to consider the fact that the plaintiff is a minor in this case. The plaintiff is a young girl. Although she does admit that she is familiar with the way that fire behaves, she's blown out a birthday candle before, and we all know that that's the standard that's raised in the open and obvious cases. In this particular instance, she was not knowledgeable of the defective condition of the candle. She testified that she didn't know it was there, and that is evidence. And further, the defendant herself testified that she did not warn or make the plaintiff aware of the fact that there was a candle that not only was burning, but was also defective and broken and was burning when she directed the plaintiff to encounter it by making her go over to the counter to take out her earrings or put them in, whatever it was. But again, this is all evidence. And the last thing I do want to note is that a lot of the cases that were cited in terms of whether or not, you know, the court erred on allowing some of these allegations to go forward, these cases went to trial. And ultimately, we saw post-trial motions. This is a motion for summary judgment at the early stages in the case. And in this particular case, it is error by the trial court to not allow this case to go forward by directly asserting that it is an absolute bar to recovery as open and obvious law with respect to fire alone. I think a lot of the elements of this case, the allegations of this case, and the facts of this case, which are at issue, were overlooked by the trial court. And that is the reason why the appellate court, in our opinion, needs to take recognition of the fact that this case is distinguishable, not only in its facts, but it is distinguishable in the way that the law would apply to this particular condition and situation that the defendant had actual notice of in this case. We again would respectfully request that the court, the appellate court, and your honors take recognition of these issues and overturn the trial court's ruling and allow the plaintiff to proceed with these questions of fact before a jury where this case belongs. Thank you, your honors.
I want to thank both of you for your briefs and your arguments. We asked some tough questions, and you both did very well in giving us a lot to think about. This is a case going to take some consideration, and we'll take it under consideration, and we'll be forthcoming with our decision. I want to thank you very much, and have a good afternoon to you both.